Welcome to the Dental Business Podcast with your host, an owner of multiple businesses, a mentor, investor, and dental surgeon, Brad Thornton.
Hi, guys, and welcome to the Dental Business Podcast. It's Brad. So we've got Michelle Taylor in today. She is from marketing practices based over in Sydney, Australia. Marketing expert. She's actually somebody who's sort of in this space talking about marketing. She helps dental practices along with other kind of healthcare and stuff practices. And she talks about this idea of relationship marketing. Now, a lot of our marketing, in fact, pretty much exclusively that we do paid for, is very much call to action. You know, you pay for an ad that tries to get a patient to click a button to book in, pretty much. But she talks about this idea of relationship marketing and actually spending money on marketing yourself to build a relationship with the patient. So it might be that, you know, you create a webinar, or actually she has clients that have got a podcast, which is speaking to patients. Now, that's, I think, a very unique perspective on dental marketing, and she gets very, very good results. So yeah, I know you'll enjoy this one. We actually speak at one point about a webinar that she's holding. Now, unfortunately, the webinar has already gone. So this is going to be released Friday. The webinar was Wednesday. So the webinar has already been. Now, I did spread this a little bit through some networks. So hopefully some of you guys listening managed to sign up to that. And some of you may have already done that anyway. But I'm sure if you follow her on social media, maybe reach out to her at marketingpractices.com.au. She may be able to help you out. I know there is a recording of it, so whether or not she doesn't know I'm saying this, so I'm sure she'll be fine. But if you maybe reach out to her, I don't know whether she'll be able to get a recording. But it's a webinar about social media, how to build and attract patients using social media in 2021, and she's got some really good insight. She's got some unique perspectives, and definitely worth a listen. Hope you enjoy it.
Thank you for joining us, Michelle. I heard you on Clubhouse, and you were giving some absolute pearls of wisdom. So I thought that I'd like to get you on the podcast. So thank you for joining me. I will do a little bit of an introduction separate to this, but would you like just to introduce yourself, what it is that you do over in Australia, what's your business, and what do you do that helps dentists?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a marketing coach. I'm the founder of Marketing Practices, which is a coaching program that helps take away the overwhelm of marketing for dental practitioners. And I usually work with the practice owner and the practice manager to collaborate and work with the team to help them understand what their marketing strategy is, and then work through marketing implementation. So my background, I've been working in marketing for over 20 years. At the 20-year mark, I stopped counting. So the first half of my career, I worked for lots of multinational organizations and headed up big marketing teams with international brands. And about the 10-year mark, I shifted over and started to work with practice owners, and it kind of slowly evolved. I was on maternity leave at the time, and a few practice owners asked me for some help with marketing, and I was consulting one-on-one for the last 10 years. And about 18 months ago, I didn't have any more time to give, and I had more people kind of asking for help. So I changed the model up a little bit and now run Marketing Practices, which is a program that helps practice owners overcome marketing. And I take them full through coaching and training and masterclasses and workshops and all of those types of things.
Yeah, it was interesting what you said there, because you said you work with owners and with the teams so that they can sort of almost realize their marketing strategy and their kind of, I suppose, vision. So when you first start working with a practice, obviously the first thing that I would assume that you wouldn't do is start throwing money at a marketing campaign. Now, with in terms of working with the team, I've got my own kind of sort of thoughts about this. I'm assuming that you may think the same, but you know, if you start working with the practice, I suppose the first thing really is to make sure that everybody's aligned, the team's on board. I mean, what do you do with regards to that? What's like the first step that you take when you start working with the practice?
Well, look, you're absolutely right. The first step is starting with marketing mindset and just understanding the basics of marketing and the fact that, you know, a lot of people don't understand that the tides have turned when it comes to marketing. And in the past, it was all about mass marketing and, you know, getting the logo and the brand out there and all that type of thing. But the tables have really turned, and we've now moved to mass personalization, and building relationships with people is the best way to attract new patients to your practice, and it's also the best way to retain those patients. So you're right from that standpoint, in that we start with marketing mindset. We talk about being overwhelmed in terms of being really time poor, and we talk about imposter syndrome. It's not easy to turn on a camera and start recording for social media and those types of things, because, you know, often people, we're private people, and we don't necessarily really want to be able to, you know, be in front of a camera. I mean, most people studied dentistry, not film. So, you know, it's this whole new world, and it's getting that marketing mindset right to understand that the biggest secret to marketing is consistency, and it needs to be a consistent team-oriented approach. So we really start with that marketing mindset, and then we move on to the marketing strategy. So within that part, we talk about who the ideal patient avatar is, making sure we know exactly what their needs and what their pain points are. And when I say pain points, it's not pain points in terms of, you know, that they have a sore gum or something like that. It's their internal pain points. It's their emotions and what is driving their decision-making. Because often those external pain points are very different to the internal pain points. And people buy and make decisions on emotion and on that kind of psychological level. They don't really make decisions on features and benefits of a particular service or those types of things. So helping really hone in those messages and get that strategy right up front, because if that's not there, you're just going to be wandering when it comes to marketing. Not much is going to work for you, and then you'll come to the conclusion marketing doesn't work, it's just a waste of time, it doesn't work for our practice, all of those types of things. So it's really important to make sure that you get that strategy in place first and then work on your marketing plan. And the plan is really, you know, it's a practical plan. It's the things that you should be doing every week. And you map that out by week, by day of week, and then by month. And then, of course, you know, what you're going to do for the whole year.
Yeah, I mean, and I've seen some marketing where, you know, as dentists, when we're speaking, for me, the marketing and almost the initial consultation is very much tailored towards what you just said, where, you know, trying to figure out what that emotion is. You know, patients don't want an implant. They don't come to you because they want you to give them an implant. They're annoyed, or they're bothered and embarrassed that their dentures are moving around when they're going out for dinner, so they feel like they can't smile when they're going for food. And it's about finding what that thing is. You know, you're helping them feel more confident eating with their family. You're not giving them an implant. And you do see dentists that focus on the implant. And I've had associates and people that have worked at my practice who, in their that sort of the very initial consultation, have overwhelmed the patient with sort of the minutiae of what an implant is and what this is, what that is, what this is. So, yeah, I totally get what you're saying. Like, find that sort of the reason why somebody, what is your solution to whatever their problem is. I'd like to touch on something that you mentioned in a bit, but I think what would be quite interesting as well, you know, you talk about sort of working with the team and working with retention of patients. What kind of things do you kind of recommend people implement that sort of just make sure that you're making your practice quite a good retentive practice, if that makes sense. What kind of measures can people implement that almost make sure that your patients just sing your praises and never want to go anywhere else?
Yeah, absolutely. And I take all of my clients through what I call a patient journey map. So that patient journey map starts out with mapping out a patient and the process that they go through from becoming absolutely never heard of, completely unaware of the practice, right through to consideration. They're like, well, okay, I've become aware. Now I'm considering. Then the conversion of, okay, I'm now going to make an appointment. And then the actual appointment and what goes on in the treatment room. And I'm not a dentist, so I'm not an expert in what goes on inside, but everything outside of that treatment room, I can certainly give, you know, lots of advice on what to do there. Then you move over to patient loyalty. And then the final, I guess, level of this patient journey is people who just will shout your names from the rooftops. So they're absolutely completely won over by your practice. And they're the ones that are on Facebook recommending your practice all the time. Anyone who talks about needing a dentist for whatever reason, they're always like, oh, you should go, you've got to go and see so-and-so. Tell them I sent you, you know, and they've got this relationship with you. So the journey of a patient, moving them through that whole process from never hearing about your practice to, you know, being completely an advocate, a brand advocate for your practice, is a very intentional process. And if we're talking about that retention piece, so we've got them in the door, they're coming to their first appointment, you want to make sure that first appointment that you are just loving on that patient as much as you can. And it's all about when they make that first appointment, what's that experience like? What's the experience like booking the appointment, whether it's via a telephone call or whether it's a beautifully seamless transition through a online booking system on your website? If it's clunky, if the patient is sitting and waiting on hold for a while, you know, all of these things are, I guess, tarnishing the experience of what that patient is going through. Are you sending out emails to confirm the patient's time, SMSs to confirm, and then moving them through a process if they've never been to your practice before, and perhaps your practice may not be, you know, visible from street level, that, or they might have to catch a lift somewhere, or, you know, it's a little bit obscure in terms of location, or parking could be difficult. You might be in a CBD location where parking is difficult. What are you doing to help make that patient's experience a good one by telling them, okay, you know, we're only 5 minutes from the tube line, this train station, and telling them how to get there from there? Or yes, we've got parking available. This is how you get to that parking. Because people come to that appointment, they don't want to be late and they try and come on time, but we all know life is busy and things can get in the way. How are we helping them find your practice, get there on time, and being in a calm mental state? They don't want to come in flustered. I mean, I did it the other day, I have to say, to my dentist, and I was really flustered. I was really upset that I normally could get parking and I couldn't this time. And, you know, you kind of get there and you're sweating a bit. And she said, because we've got all these COVID things going on, can I take your temperature? And I'm sweating because it's summer in Sydney, right? And I was just running to get there. So, you know, I'm like, oh, really? You've got to take my temperature now? And she said, oh, don't worry, it won't work like that. I'm like, okay. So, you know, you don't want your patient to be in that state. You want them to be calm and relaxed. And it all starts from before they come in to that appointment. It's the things that you can do to help them get there. And then obviously the appointment, the way the front desk staff interact is so important. The way that the patient waiting area is set out, currently with COVID, what those social distancing plans are like and the procedures and stuff that you're putting into place, what the ambience is like, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Do the people at the front desk welcome you with open arms like they're seeing a friend again, you know, and being really friendly? And I know patients that will not go back to a practice because they don't like the person sitting at the front desk and they had a bad experience there. So it's all about, you know, attitude and experience and making that whole first appointment amazing. And then obviously everything that goes on in the consult room, but when they come out, what is that experience like again? And how do you book in those next appointments and still keep communicating with patients after that point in time? One of the biggest mistakes I see practice owners make is that they kind of ignore the patients, apart from sending out a reminder or recall. They kind of ignore that their patients that have been there. And, you know, when we're looking at getting new patients into the practice versus increasing the value of existing patients, from a marketing perspective, it is like 10 times cheaper to market to your current database rather than focus on attracting new patients into your practice. It's a very expensive process to attract patients. But how are we actually marketing our practice and the additional services that you may not have had the time to talk about during that initial consultation? How do we keep telling them that? You know, regular emails to your patients. And I know a lot of people get really kind of nervous about sending out emails to patients and they don't want to spam and nobody wants to spam and no one wants to receive spam. But if you are sending out information that comes back to that ideal patient avatar and their internal pain points, and you're sending out information to help solve those internal pain points by patient education, they are going to be opening up your emails every single time because you're not selling to them. People don't want to open up emails and be sold to. I mean, if you're on an email list for, you know, any major department store, you'll know that you get bombarded like every day with what's on sale this time. People don't like that. And that's where email marketing has got a really bad reputation because they don't want to be sold to. But if that email looks like a personal email from the dentist to the patient, I'm not going to ignore an email from my dentist. I'm going to want to see what they have to say. They're my healthcare provider. I want to see what they have to say. And if that email is crafted in a way that it looks like a personal email rather than perhaps a newsletter that has more graphics and all of those types of things on there, then you are connecting with them much more and that communication channel can be opened. So that's a big one. I see a lot of practices kind of ignore that component of sending emails. And, you know, it's not an expensive thing to do. It's very cheap compared to Google ads or Facebook ads or all of those types of things.
And so out of interest, actually, have you got a frequency of emails that you think's a certain appropriateness? I know I've had sort of an internal conflict from sort of what I feel is right or wrong, but I kind of take a step back sometimes and similar to what you just said, I think about certain companies or places that I've interacted with that do send me quite a lot of emails. And there are the ones that you're annoyed at, but there are the ones that even though they may send you emails a few times per week, I'm actually not annoyed by that. And I might not open all of them, but, you know, I don't unsubscribe. I don't delete them. I kind of read them and you know, so I sort of think, well, if you do write it the right way and you send it a certain amount of frequency, then yeah, that's fine. I mean, have you got any sort of tips in regards to that, how often it should be?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is, I'll start off by saying this, there's a very well-known rule in marketing called the rule of sevens. And it basically states that a person needs to see a message at least seven times before they kind of register it and take it on board. So right at the start of COVID, for example, a lot of practice owners are saying, you know, we send out one email to our patients and they're still coming in without a mask on and all of this, and they're getting upset that they're not following those procedures. because a person needs to see that message and hear it in different ways and present it in different manners at least seven times before they get it and understand it. So looking at it from that perspective, and, you know, I know it can be challenging getting these things up and running from a practice perspective. So if you're just sending out, and if you're never sending out an email, start with once a month. Do it once a month and start to get it on a regular rotation. And if you're doing it more frequently than that, then I would up it to once every 2 weeks and see how that is. You can monitor your unsubscribes. You can see who isn't reading them, and you can check out all of your data to find out what the open rates are and what you're looking for. So it's not necessarily an exact number. I like to say send something out when you've got something to say that is going to be relevant to your target audience. And if that's once a week, it's once a week. I've got a practice within my program right now. In about a week and a half's time, she is running a webinar, a patient education webinar about preventive dentistry. And at the moment, the frequency of sending out emails is it's been once a week, but we're increasing that to every day until that webinar happens, and then it'll drop back. There'll be a few more after that, but it will drop back. So, you know, when you've got something to say, send out that email. But as a general rule, I would be communicating once every 2 weeks to your patient database. And I'll tell you why. At any point in time, about 20% of your patient database is considering going somewhere else. Something may have happened. They weren't happy with the price. Mrs. Jones down the street was talking about how amazing her dentist was and sounded pretty good. They may be looking at moving out of the area, all of those types of things. About 20% of your patient database is looking to move. So when you think about it that way, what can you do within your practice to help that 20% of people want to stay with you? And there's going to be natural attrition, of course, like, you know, people completely moving out of the area you can't control. But are there things that you can put in place to make sure that you are satisfying their needs? Do you have a patient survey that goes out regularly so that you can learn from that and better your services? Sometimes it's confronting. We don't really want to know about the problem sometimes, and it feels a little bit icky, and you think, oh, I don't really want to send this out. I don't want to know, you know. But actually, every time I've implemented a survey with a client, they have got so much more out of it than, you know, the negatives. Tiny little things that they might be able to tweak really easily that has made all the difference for their patients. And every practice is different. You know, it's really hard to compare practice with practice because every patient avatar is different. The whole database of patients is a different set of people. So everybody's individual. So it's really important that, you know, you figure that out, look at your data, look at your statistics, and see what people really like. And if people are really interacting with a certain style of content, give them more of it. But what you want to do, make sure that 20% of people aren't going. And on the flip side, if you're in an area where you've got lots of competitors, there are 20% of people on those competitors' databases that are up for grabs. And what can you do to attract them to your practice?
I like it. you mentioned and the statistics. You're talking about numbers and statistics and things. Just a quick touch on that, actually. What do you do with the staff? Because one of the difficulties that I find personally, and I know other dentists do that I've spoke to, is ensuring that the metrics are actually recorded. So are there any quite sort of easy ways to make sure that things are being recorded correctly so that we know where people are coming from and we're kind of getting all of that information? Have you got any tips with that?
Yeah, and it is a really important thing to do, because I'll tell you a little story. A couple of years ago, a practice that I was working with, they had the opportunity to do a very big write-up in the Sydney Morning Herald here in Sydney, which is kind of the most premium, largest newspaper in Sydney. And we had everything planned. We got the photographers there. They took some beautiful photos. We worked with the journalists, and it was a brilliant article. And I said to the practice manager, right, so you're going to record, you know, all the new patients that you get from this. So you all good? Yep, good. She was, yep, no problem. Yep, all good. And to be honest, it was my mistake that I didn't go into more detail to tell her how to do that, because I called her about 2 weeks later. And being a newspaper, you know, the results are going to be reasonably soon, right? After you do something in a newspaper, you're going to start to see results straight away. And I rang the practice manager. I said, so, you know, how's it all going? And it was 2 weeks after, and she said, oh, good. She said, you know, we got 9 people call in. And I said, that's great. So how many of them have gone on to book appointments? She said, oh, I just put a tally next to the phone, like just little strokes and a cross. I didn't actually record who those patients were. I just recorded how many. And I'm like, oh, no. I forgot to, you know, go into detail. So if you are doing a measurable campaign like that, if you are running a specific campaign where you are expecting some new patients to come in, make sure the people at the front desk, ask them, and make sure if you've got an online booking system that you're able to ask them where they found out about your practice. Because that's so important. And then tag that person in your database. Now, if you can't do it in your practice management software, you can do it in any email broadcast system. So MailChimp or ActiveCampaign or ConvertKit, all of those will let you tag people. And that way you can follow the journey of that patient. So you may not be able to know exactly what that return on investment from that particular article was within 2 weeks, but you will know within 2 months roughly what you think that's going to be, and you can track that over time. So it's really important to actually track the actual patient. And you know, in a lot of my practices' email systems, they might have over 50 tags for different people, because we're tracking from where they've all come from. And people might have 5 different tags because we know that they're a mother with children that are approaching this kind of early teen phase where we might be needing to look at orthodontics. So all of these things are tagged. You must do that in your patient software, or if you can't do it there, move the data into something like MailChimp, ActiveCampaign or ConvertKit, and they will all do those for you. So if you're sending out emails to patients, those systems will let you know what the unsubscribe rate is, and you can actually click on and see who unsubscribed. Sometimes you might see, oh, that's right, you know, that patient asked for a transfer of their data to another practice because they moved across the country or something like that. So you might actually know the reason why they're unsubscribing. And it'll also show you open rates, and also if there are any buttons on that email, like if you've gotten a button that goes through to your online booking system, you will know how many people clicked on those and how many and who they were, if you're using those systems. So it's really important to constantly keep track of that. In terms of open rates, it's always a little bit disheartening sometimes, because look, at 100% open rate is completely not achievable. So you've got to set your standards at the level of what the general kind of industry, general email marketing standards are. So anything above 20% as an open rate, you're doing pretty well. Anything, you know, kind of into the 30s and 40s, you're doing excellent, because it is, sometimes there's glitches with different types of email systems that don't necessarily record it. there could be, you know, out of offices, it goes in people's junk, all of those types of things can affect your open rates. But if you're getting those open rates into the 30 and 40%, you're doing really well. So I would keep going, because your patient database is actively engaged in what you're saying and they want to receive information from you.
Yeah, well, when you were talking about how you present sort of yourself as a practice to patients when they walk through the door, the way that you greet them on the phone, how prescriptive are you with the team? How much training is that training? Is it around, okay, when you answer the phone, say this, say this, say this, or do you try and instill a culture or a, you know, right, this practice, this is how we want to be presented, and try and leave it up to them? Or are you really prescriptive with it, or are you kind of somewhere in the middle?
Yeah, look, I think I would probably say somewhere in the middle. We definitely have scripts to follow, but not word for word, because we don't want robots talking to patients. We want real people talking to patients. So if you are trying to create some systems for your own practice, I would look at almost writing how that would happen and what that would look like as a best practice example. And then, you know, giving your staff, I guess, some liberties to making it their own and making it feel really natural for them. And, you know, that's why it is so important to come back during that marketing strategy phase. You really should be thinking about, what is the practice personality? Yeah. And often people go, well, okay, well, that's a bit, you know, that's a bit weird. What are we talking about here? And what we're talking about is, how do you want the tone to be? Are you a really high-end cosmetic dentist where the layout of the practice is in a very premium, prestigious way? You want your staff to be mimicking that personality and that tone. If you're a practice that's a family practice and you welcome lots of kids, you want your staff to be bubbly and be able to speak well to children and make them laugh and those types of things. So it all comes back to what that strategy is and what you stand for as a practice. So it's really important to kind of nail that down before you go and, you know, talk to staff about how you want them to interact with patients and those types of things.
Yeah. One of the things that made you really stand out to me, actually, when I first started listening to you, and maybe it's because you come from a non-dental world and you've come into dentistry, was you were talking about how you're working with a dentist who is doing a podcast. And you've mentioned already in this interview, you've mentioned about that you've got a client who's doing a webinar in a week or so. I think that's really refreshing, actually. I think sometimes with dentistry, we're quite blinkered with the way we feel we can talk to patients or market. So I actually think you may be the only person I've ever heard in this space talk about other, I'll call them less traditional methods of communicating with patients. I'd quite like to go into that, because, I mean, I've got this podcast, and when I go to my podcast mastermind, I mean, I've been going there for a while now, but when I tell people I'm a dentist, the first thing they say is, oh, so you're going to be doing a podcast about teeth. How will that work? And my reaction was always, oh, no, this is more for dentists. It's not really to patients. Because I had a limiting belief in my head as well that, you know, you can't really have a podcast tailored toward patients. But you've proved me wrong. I'd quite like you to go into that, really. Because I think the way we market is obviously important, and the way we speak to our patients is important. And you've opened my eyes to the different ways we can do that. So it'd be quite nice for you to touch on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I come from a place of relationship marketing is absolutely key. And, you know, to be honest, a lot of my practices don't do a lot of Google ads or Facebook ads and those types of things. They may do a Facebook ad to drive people to a webinar, but they don't really do a lot of the, I guess, you know, a bit more passive marketing. To me, it's about relationship marketing and building those relationships up with your patients. And, you know, when I say the word relationship, it's not necessarily that kind of really personal one-on-one kind of stuff. It's a professional relationship with you being a healthcare provider. And it's about how we can position you within your local community as the expert on that healthcare. So, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be a podcast topic where you're talking about the ins and outs of dental implants, for example. It might be a more relating to topics about preventive dentistry and how you can, from a health and wellness standpoint, how dentistry fits into the patient's kind of overall health journey. And it's providing education. So in these webinars, we don't do selling. We do let people know, obviously, what the next steps is if they want to come and see the dentist. So, you know, we obviously provide links to online bookings and phone numbers and the website and all of that type of thing. But it's not necessarily a selling thing. We wouldn't go out and say, okay, so for the first like 10 people that are on this webinar that comes to see us, we'll give you X amount of discount on your first treatment or whatever. You know, it's really about, to me, that devalues the service and it devalues a health practitioner being the person within the community whose role it is to not only treat patients that come into the practice, but also educate the community on whatever topics are appropriate to your profession. So, you know, I think it's about building those relationships, because if somebody sits through a full webinar and they get to know you and they see your mannerisms, psychologically, there is so much more going on for that person because they're starting to get to know you. They start to like you because you might be likable and say things that resonate with them and tell them stories that they can relate to. So they get to know you, they like you, and then they start to build that trust up, because you're not going in there with a hard sell at the end of webinars. I mean, we've all been on other types of webinars where we know the deal, right? The webinar kind of environment is about giving information and then there's your sale. But if you approach that as a from a place of education, patients are going to feel a lot more at ease with you. And once you start to build that know, like, and trust factor, you need to get them to that point for them to take that next step in the patient journey. So it's all about giving. And you know what? Some people who listen, they may not need you right now, but they might have a neighbor that does, or they might have a family member that does, and they're just talking to them about that, or they might just not be ready yet. And, you know, I certainly have people who come to my webinars and, you know, from a year ago, and they say, I saw you a year ago and we were talking about this and I've been following you since then. And it's taken a year for them to say, I'm ready now. I'm ready now to come and see you and I'm interested in what you can do to help me. So as long as you can position yourself in a way that you're educating and providing value, you're helping solve their internal pain points, people will be really interested to listen to what you have to say. If you set the precedent where this is going to be a selling exercise, people aren't going to waste their time on doing that, because they feel like there is an ulterior motive behind that. And we don't want that with healthcare. You know, it's not going to build up long-lasting good relationships with patients that keep coming back to you because they just wouldn't even consider going anywhere else.
Yeah. So, you know, the idea of doing a webinar, I think, you know, for some people that are listening, they might be thinking, oh, blimey, now that's a bit of the, you know, that's new. But there are things that people do Absolutely at the moment, and that is, or at least try to do, and that is the regular social media posting. It's the Instagram, the Facebook, the Twitter maybe, and I think that's a really difficult thing for people sometimes to get into the routine of doing. Now, you've got a really wonderful way of breaking social media posts down and trying to enable you to be consistent. I'd like you to share that with the people listening, because I made notes when I was listening to you on Clubhouse about this. Part of what you were saying is something I do, or at least something I try to do, to plan. But your methodology is fantastic, so I'd like you to share that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I'm giving away all my secrets today. Love it. So what you do, and, you know, staring at a blank Facebook page thinking, I have to post because I haven't done it in 2 weeks, what am I going to post, is actually really overwhelming. So the first thing you need to do is to step away from the computer completely and your social accounts and start to come up with a plan. And the best way to do that, I've found, is to, we've got 12 months of the year, and let's just say we're going to work on for the next 3 months going out, and just focus on that and think of three really broad topics that you've got a lot to talk about, and something that you know resonates with your ideal patient avatar and the services that you also like to provide. So three different topics. So let's just say it is, let's say the topic is how to know when your adolescent is ready for braces or needs braces. So let's just say that's your first month topic. And what you can do then is create a blog post about that. And that blog post may be my top five tips on how to know if your adolescent needs braces right now. Because I can tell you, there's a whole bunch of people, your potential patients, that see other kids in their class, for example, in their child's class, and say, oh gosh, they've got braces now. Does mine need that? I don't know. You know, they're in this state of, I know this is going to be a reasonably expensive exercise. If I do something now, is it going to be cheaper for me? What is the best thing? So let's just say that's the topic we're talking about. And we're talking about those pain points. So we go into the top five tips on how to know if your adolescent is ready for orthodontic work. And what we do is we break down those top five tips that you've used in that blog post that's on your website into five Facebook posts. So that's a whole week of Facebook posts done. You've already got the content made because you did the blog for it, and you've now got five posts. Now, the other thing you could do is say, okay, let's layer on top of that some research. Go onto Google and have a look at the statistics. 15% of 12-year-olds have already started their orthodontic treatment. Or, you know, find a statistic that suits the topic that you're talking about. And you could find a couple of them. So you're filling up more of your month's worth of social media posts. And then you might record a video. Hi, this is Michelle. I want to talk to you about my top five tips on how to know whether your adolescent is ready for braces. Because I know how overwhelming it can be for some parents. It's an expensive exercise. From a health perspective, you want to do the right thing for your child. And it's often an area where you just don't know a lot about. So I'm going to give you my top five tips. And you go through your top five tips. And that could be a 1 to 2 minute video. And there's another social media post. It's the same content. So the practice owner just needs to write the blog post. You could have staff within your practice that are able to implement that from that one piece of information. And guess what? There's your email to your patient database. So it's the same topic. Here are my top five tips on how to know whether your adolescent needs braces. It's the same topic and it's the same wording, because we go back to the rule of marketing. A person needs to see your message at least 7 times before they take it in and understand it. They might be scrolling through email really fast. They saw your email. They kind of took a quick look at it and, the doorbell rang, or the kids were needing something and they get distracted. But you caught them again because you gave them that same information on social media. They had some time waiting at the school gate picking up kids, and they watched your video for a minute. So what we're doing is we're taking one piece of content and we are breaking it down into all the small little elements and creating, you could create, 50 pieces of content easily from one blog post and one topic that you've chosen. And that's a month's worth. So really, from the practice owner's perspective, their involvement needs to be the time it takes to write one blog post a month. And you could bang those out. You could do like 3 months worth in probably 2 hours, let's just say. And then you may be the one that's filming the video, or it might be one of your associates, because you need to build up their profile as well in the practice. So, it depends on what the practice situation is like, depends on who would need to do that. But when you break it all down like that, and then when you overlay, here are our opening hours, reminding them of our COVID restrictions, this is what the parking situation is like, it's someone's birthday in our practice, we're celebrating that. Mrs. Jones down the street bought us this lovely card because she had a great experience, and I'm going to take a photo of all of this opportunistic content that comes your way during the day and during the weeks, and you're going to post that as well. So that all overlays on top of your main monthly message. And I can tell you, you will get to a point where you're actually thinking, I've already posted today, but I've got something else to post because Easter's coming up and I need to tell people, about what to do over Easter time because we're closing, what to do in an emergency and all of those things. Remember, people are scrolling through social media really quickly. I know we're not sitting on public transport much at the moment, but if you are and you watch people, take a look at, just kind of look over your shoulder without them knowing, take a look at how people are consuming their social media feed. They're flicking through really fast. They don't have the time. There's a lot of people that will not watch a video like over a minute. Absolutely. They're going through things really quickly. So keep your messages as one single message per post. That is it, one message. And same with when you break your emails down, one message per email.
And you've mentioned video a couple of times, actually. What do you say to those who do feel nervous about going on camera and are quite hesitant to do that? Is there any sort of words of reassurance, or do you just delegate it to somebody else, or do you just have to, just get on with it and do it and get yourself out there?
Do you know, I'll tell you a little story, my own experience. I'm 100% introverted. My happy place is kind of at home on the couch with a good book, and put me in a room with 100 people and I'll kind of, move to the corner. I'd actually rather be upstage on stage presenting, right, than being in a room. And, I really struggled with it to start with. And I am in a couple of masterminds and a social media expert who I'm very close with took me aside one day, and we were actually in Canada at a conference and when we could all travel. And we were kind of sitting in this restaurant right near the waterfront, and he said, "What the hell is stopping you from doing this?" And I said, I'll do it when I get my hair cut, and I want to sort out, a nice backdrop. And, I was making up all these excuses. And he said to me, "Your hair looks fine. And by the way, the harbour is a great backdrop. Let's go and do it now." And all of a sudden, I just left the meal in front of me because my stomach just felt terrible. And we walked outside and I thought, he's not going to make me do this, is he? Anyway, he did. He pressed the live button. He said, I'm going to show you. And he actually went live and he said, hi, his name's Jerry. He said, hi, it's Jerry here. I'm actually showing Michelle what it's like to go live on Facebook. And he kind of put me right on the spot. And he said to me, what, would you rather go swimming in the harbour or, you know, do this Facebook live? And, you know, I'm from Sydney. I swim and we swim in the harbour all the time. I'm thinking I'd rather go in the harbour. And you know what? We did it and I looked back on it. I thought, yeah, I looked pretty awkward, to be honest. And what he said to me is he said, good, because you've got your first one out of the way. You'll never look as awkward as what you did on that one as you did the first time. And you will start to get more and more confident at it over time. So, and he's right. You know, I produce hundreds of videos now, hundreds and hundreds of videos. And you end up getting to a point, and I think for practice owners, particularly the ones that I've coached through this overwhelm and imposter syndrome and all of that that comes up, and I know you didn't go to study dentistry to get on camera, but you did study to help people, and you can help people so much more when you create videos, because they can connect with you so much better and you can solve their problems and help them overcome something that is pretty significant in their life. And that's a gift. And what a shame if you didn't put those butterfly feelings aside that everybody gets. What a shame to deny the person that you could be helping that because of that uncomfortable feeling of getting in front of a camera. Yeah. We are our own worst self-critics. You will look at that video. I look at my videos and think, oh gosh, I think my mouth is a bit wonky when I talk. And you know, I say a lot. It's just a habit. I try not to, but it just comes out. And then I see some experts do it. I'm thinking they say a lot too. We are our own worst critics. And most people will be curious to see you and they will cheer you on, particularly if you are providing valuable information that is helping solve their pain points. So, you know, it is uncomfortable. Put up with those uncomfortable feelings, because the benefit of you doing that for the patient and for your practice and all of that stuff that goes with it far outweighs the I guess staying in your comfort zone and feeling like you can't move to that level in terms of marketing. You know, I'll come back to what I say. Marketing is not about, we're not about mass marketing anymore. We're about mass personalization. And if you want to hide behind your practice brand, your branding is all part of the package, but people come to see you and they come to buy from you and they come to get advice from you. And that's who you need to promote. You need to promote yourself and the practitioners within your practice and your staff that are on the front desk that are interacting with patients. You need to be able to do all of that. So look, it's one of those things that it feels uncomfortable. The first one's going to be so awkward, but guess what? You're in charge of the delete button. You can just delete it and record another one. Practice recording yourself. And here's a top tip. If you want to practice going live on Facebook, create a group that's just you in that group and maybe a spouse or a partner or whatever, and have a go. You can just go live in that group, see what it feels like. Once you press that live button, there's actually other things you need to do when you go live on Facebook. So you're not live straight away. You can't kind of accidentally have your phone in your pocket and go live on Facebook. There are other things. And I was speaking to one practice owner and she said, oh, I really want to do this. You know, I'm finally there. And I said, yes, let me show you what happens after you press that live button, because you don't go live yet. It counts you down. And there are some other settings that you can choose when you do that. So, you know, have a practice and do it. And the first one will take you ages and you'll get the fight or flight response and all of that kind of stuff come up. But move past it, because the benefit of doing that is going to be so, so much more than you know, just sitting in that comfort zone and relying on your practice logo to be kind of marketing and selling for you?
Yeah, I think some really good points. And just to say, I always notice I've got a really shiny part of my forehead up here whenever I'm on. So that's my insecurity there. I always try and get myself not underneath the light back. There's always one catches that point on the top of my head. But anyway,
and you know, I didn't even notice. So there you
go. I am my own worst critic. But yeah, you're right. I think when you do them, you feel awkward, but afterwards you feel invigorated that you've done it. And then the next one's easier and it does become a lot more comfortable. And people need to realize that, kind of get out of their own way, like you said. Michelle, I think we're coming towards the end. I think what I'd like to do, just to make sure, now you mentioned you've got a webinar coming up. I'd like people to know how they find you. We have quite a few listeners in Australia, so it'd be nice for them to be able to, I mean, even a webinar is global, isn't it? But it'd be nice to know how people find you, maybe some information about this webinar that's coming up, how they connect, how they could hire you or whatever, how you could help them.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing, you can find me on Facebook. So it's just at Marketing Practices. And send me a DM if you want to reach out, or you can follow that page. Also, my website is marketingpractices.com.au. And if you want to send me an email, you can email info@marketingpractices.com.au. My up-and-coming webinar is on the 17th of February at 8 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. So that would be early or in the morning UK time. And I am going to talk about how to attract patients specifically using social media and the changes that are happening in social media that we can see happening in 2021. So that is the topic that I'm going to cover in this webinar. And, you know, I love to give, I love to help people. So it's going to be packed full of lots of gold nuggets so that you know what to post, when to post, how to work the social media algorithms, and you know how to build up yourself and your profile within your local community, and try to avoid those crickets on social media, which nobody wants. So yeah, so it's going to be a good one. I do webinars very regularly, so if you want to jump onto my email list, I always email my patient database. Sorry, not my patient database, my database of clients, and we give them all the information on there, and you can kind of register straight from that email list as well. So I love helping people. That's what I do. And hopefully I have given you some good advice through this podcast, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you, Brad, and to share some of this information with people, because marketing, it doesn't need to be overwhelming, and it can be quite exciting when you really get it right and you see those results, because it becomes a little bit addictive. You want to do more and more of it once that happens, and you kind of get on a bit of a high when you have the success with that. And that's really where I want to help practice owners, to take away the overwhelm, free up their time, but really focus on the things that actually work when it comes to marketing, and helping in any way I can.
Perfect. Well, Michelle, will you enjoy the rest of your Saturday evening now, I guess, and yeah, we'll speak soon. And are you going to be doing a Clubhouse room soon, do you think? Is that something you're going to be doing?
Clubhouse rooms, yes. I've got a few things coming up. Yes, I will. I'll definitely post those in Clubhouse. So if you want to follow me on Clubhouse, it's just Michelle Taylor. You'll find me on there as well. And love the Clubhouse platform. I am going to start to test what we can do in terms of how practice owners can use Clubhouse for patient education, and how to use that as another area to attract people to the practice. So it's a really interesting space, obviously evolving very quickly. I've been on Clubhouse since around December, and it has changed incredibly since then. So it is definitely a platform to look out for. So we'll definitely see you there, Brett.
Perfect. All right. I'll see you later, Michelle. Thank you for joining us.